Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm well. How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. I see you brought me a little treat for us to try.
I don't know that it's a treat, Mark. I went yesterday to the fancy food show with our chef.
And what, was it fancy?
It wasn't fancy. If anyone wants to look at some back issues of our show, you can go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, where we mercilessly made fun of the ridiculous marketing attempts that are somehow related to things called food.
Honestly, I remember 10, 15 years ago, the fancy food show having
awesome
interesting
stuff,
products.
Yeah. It's all about marketing.
You know, and not just, I mean, it wasn't everybody wasn't an interesting product. There was schlock there, too.
You saw Austrian roasted pumpkin seed oil there before you saw it in the general population. You saw elderflower syrup from Austria before you saw it in the general population. You saw great balsamic vinegars there before you saw them as outside of great Italian restaurants. You know, but so the fancy food show at one time had a bunch of, well, fancy food in it. and now it's got sort of processed
it's
food
less
and fancy packaging.
It's less fancy and more schmancy.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let me give you some of the low points. If you want to hear a funny show, actually, we did the Fancy Food Show
last year,
and it's up on the restaurantguysradio.com. You can go listen to it, and there was a lot of ridiculous stuff there.
There was a lot of bad stuff.
And there were one
there
or two good
year.
Things. This year, I found nothing great.
What's funny is Francis asked me if I want to go to the Fancy Food Show again, and I was like, are you kidding?
Well, here's the deal. I took the chef, and I did find one amusing thing, which I did not tell you about. There were some good vendors there, like D'Artagnan, which is a vendor of foie gras and specialty meats. They're wonderful. Ariane Degan, the owner, was there. And they were doing their normal great stuff. But this isn't, you know,
but
new.
It's not new. And the problem is you have to wade through all of this garbage.
And I went right to the Ariane Degan table and got me some meats to have, and it was delicious. But what I found when D'Artagnan, you know, of course, is the famous musketeer, D'Artagnan, right? They have a way of marketing, and they make their promotional people wear, like, the cape of D'Artagnan and carry a sword and have the plumed hat.
And the little mustache.
I found one of our former employees.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Eric was there.
Oh, that's hysterical.
And he was wearing the cape with the fleur-de-lis and the sword. I actually wasn't wearing this. I said, where's your sword? He said, it's over there. I'm like, you got to carry the sword, man. And I also said, whatever I did to you as your boss, I didn't do this.
Never did I make you wear a plume.
But the food was good. So we went around to the show, and I didn't even find that much stuff to make fun of. But I'll tell you what did... I don't know. I found it to be sad because, and I had a discussion with the chef, and we also took our sous chef Jason, and we out to the fancy food show, and we walked around, found nothing.
Was your chef concerned when he saw one of your former chefs dressed in a plume?
No, we were hysterical. former cook, not a sous chef, former chef. But we, in walking around, it's just so sad because we work so hard, and so many people work so hard to offer great food, seasonal ingredients, local ingredients, real food, whole food, the people who come on our show, who've written books about real food and what great food is all about. And these charlatans, there's a famous chef who had
charlatan, D'Artagnan. Yeah. That was a good little play.
Historical, I'm very historical. But these charlatans who go and they have, you know, the salad dressing with the name of a famous chef, who I won't mention because he's a nice guy. But he has famous chef's famous salad dressing, right, which is way too expensive more expensive than what you find at the supermarket shelf. But read the ingredients. High fructose corn syrup. You know?
Guar gum.
Guar gum. Carrageenan. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's Just what he'd serve you in the restaurant. Sure. Your little fantasy.
I'm wondering if anybody out there realizes that we don't have any guar gum in our restaurant. There's just not any there. Nowhere on the shelves, nowhere.
And there was a ginger ale there that was like based on a 100-year-old recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the back of the ingredients, like corn syrup, some other kind of gum. I forget the name of the other gum.
Yeah, they weren't,
gum arabic. And I'm like, okay, there weren't clipper ships carrying large quantities of high fructose corn syrup among the Caribbean so they could make their ginger beer.
Almost never.
Not based on a 100-year-old recipe. Just, you know, stuff it with that label. All right, here's the deal. But then one of my favorite people, Rachel Ray, was not there herself, but she was there, and you know,
she was there in spirit.
See, I don't like Rachel Ray's food. I think she's interesting. I think she's nice. Actually, I think she's cute. but I think she's very attractive. But the food she makes is just abominable. White trash food from a trailer park. I mean, it's like,
wow.
Oh, no. Come on. I watched a show where she's like, the way to make beef Wellington, which is beef, mushroom, duck cell, and
foie gras
wrapped in a puff pastry. And it was something like, I'm exaggerating a little, but not much. She took like a piece of steak. Liverwurst or foie gras pate from the deli counter.
Liverwurst, that's
like,
a goodie.
And like mushroom soup and put it in a Pop-Tart or something. I know,
and I was like, made a Pop-Tart sandwich out of it.
See, it's not that difficult to cook great food anyway. I'm like, Rachel, that ain't great food, man. So the line of products we have is Rachel Ray. I got the sample handed to me. Rachel Ray extra virgin olive oil, or in Rachel Ray terms, EVOO. She's so cute. And here it is. I got the sample, and I'm pouring out some now, and I'm going to smell it. And it smells like absolutely nothing. And it's $25 a bottle for a 25-ounce bottle. So I'm going to try it.
Now, when you taste olive oil, you actually sip it. Francis is handing over to me. You actually sip olive oil. You taste it like a lot of us in the professional world will actually pour it into a glass and take a little
like
sip of it.
So Mark's going to do it
now. Less than that.
Mark's going to do it. You don't drink as much. Tastes like absolutely nothing.
Well, it tastes like supermarket olive oil is what it tastes like. It tastes like what you would expect in the Berio bottle or can.
No, Berio's much better than this olive oil. much better than this olive oil.
You are cold. Just
no,
heartless.
No, I'm sorry. You know what? It's like I think that celebrity chefs, when they teach people about real food and good food and honest food, I think they do a great public service. But I think when you slap your picture on a piece of garbage that's just the same as any other manufactured olive oil, let me make a recommendation out there. If you're thinking about buying Rachel Ray olive oil out there, just download a picture from the internet, slop it on top of a bottle of Frantoia Sicilian olive oil.
There's a great olive oil out
there
that retails anywhere from $21 to $29 for a liter, so 36, 37 ounces.
And it's Sicilian olive oil, but it's harvested early to be in the Tuscan style, and it's 100,000 million billion times better.
And it's actually cheaper than this.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinary, extraordinary olive oil. And just...
You know, but
just look for it. It's
here,
better.
I hate when people are taken in by this. I'm like, let's buy a bottle of expensive olive oil and see if it's any better. And then they pour it, and it's not. But there really is good olive oil out there. There's really good food out there. We're going to link you to Frantoia olive oil. I'll tell you how to find it. You can actually buy it from us at Catherine Lombardi if you want to. You know, we'll sell it retail. We'll sell it for you if you want to buy it instead of this stuff. You can find it at restaurantguysradio.com. After the break, we're going to be talking with Michael Rollman, who's written many wonderful books on many topics, including being a chef. His latest book is called Soul of a Chef, The Journey Towards Perfection. Stick with us, and we'll talk with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, stage left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Michael Rollman. He's been on the show before. He's the author of several great books, from Wooden Boats, chronicling the craft of boat making, to Walk on Water, chronicling the life and work of a pediatric neurosurgeon, to several books on chefs, including The Making of a Chef and The Reach of a Chef. And he joins us today again to discuss his new book, The Soul of a Chef, The Journey Towards Perfection.
Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
You're becoming an actual regular here. What is this, your third trip with us on The Restaurant Guys?
I think it is.
We love you.
And you owe it to me to get the name of the book right.
It's
The Reach of a Chef this time.
Oh, it's The Reach of a Chef.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all so
yeah,
similar.
I was thinking about making it a different title. So it didn't have the sort of, I don't know, you know, part one, part two, part three aspect of it. But I think my publisher wanted to, because Soul of a Chef did so well, people, the publisher wanted to trick people into buying it.
Well, now, in The Reach of a Chef, why don't you talk to us about the focus of, because this was a great book, and it's really a very different book, sort of in the same setting, but looking at a very different aspect of the restaurant world and the role of a chef in society. Why don't you talk to us about where The Reach of a Chef is focused?
I wrote The Reach of a Chef because, because I needed to keep exploring this world, because it remains a fascinating world to me, the world of the professional kitchen. And it is of increasing interest to people. And moreover, what this book is really about is all the changes that have gone on in the chef world since I began, even since I began writing about it 10 years ago. The changes are phenomenal. And I wanted to explore what those changes were, what they mean, and what it portends for the future. How is culinary school changing? What did the celebrity do to the chef himself and his business? What's this business about celebrity chef and chef branding? That kind of issue is what I explore in the book.
Well, let's talk a little bit about I read a great article that talked about the gastropreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Which was sort of the entrepreneurship, this idea that, you know, Alain Ducasse is not behind the range cooking in your kitchen simultaneously in Monaco, Paris, and New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he has a long reach of businesses. How is the role of the gastropreneur different than the role of the great chef of days gone by?
Well, the chef is now changing. He's moved into a less romantic role. The famous chef has. The chef is not back there, you know, putting plushes of Chervil on each person's plate and finishing it off. Or very rarely he is anymore. And I don't think he did a lot of that anyway. I mean, Andre Soltner probably wasn't back there cooking. He's sort of the famous artist monk, chef icon. The fact is, What really matters in most restaurants, in 99% of the restaurants, is how well the chef trains his staff, how well he's able to have them replicate his style and his food. And it's always been like that. But now we just know more about it. There's a big stink about it, I think. You know, people are sort of up in arms about this. Well, no, it's never been that way. So I just don't think it's a big deal. Judge on the food. Don't judge on the fame of a chef, for crying out loud. Judge on your experience of the food.
Right. Do you think that chefs are becoming distracted, though, or you know, because they're doing TV shows, or restaurant owners are becoming distracted because they're doing radio shows? Do you think do you think that's happening?
It depends on the chef. I think it's very easy to get distracted now. It's very easy to lose your way. Look at the catastrophe of Rocco Desperado. Can Ming Tsai run a great restaurant and do all his TV stuff, which he does a lot of, and he's good at? I don't know. I hear Blue Ginger is great in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Can Thomas Keller, who's a friend and who is sort of one of the most famous chefs in the world, can he do it? It's harder because there are so many demands on him. He's certainly not spending as much time with the food. He's letting his great staff do that. So you're not getting Thomas Keller's food anymore, and maybe that's fine.
Well, I think the idea is, like you said, it's maybe it is Thomas Keller's food because, I mean, he does have the final say over it all, and I don't know when it becomes not his food anymore. Because a great chef, like you said, wasn't always in the kitchen every night all the time anyway. I mean, chefs take days off, too,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. It has to be this way.
And chefs have always taken a day off. And when we were it's funny because you're in the restaurant business. You often go out to dinner on a Monday night. And what we would always say is, you know, the mark of a truly great restaurant is the food as great on Monday night as it is on Thursday night? And that was, you know, being people in the restaurant business who only had Monday night off, we would go and have the food of great sous chefs around.
Right, you were almost always eating the food of the sous chef on a Monday.
And that, to me, really is the mark of a great restaurant. You know, because if it's only great when he's back there, he's a great cook. I don't know if that makes him a great chef. Would you agree with that assessment?
That's a very interesting definition, and I think a smart one, yeah.
Yeah, it's because the idea of a chef is a leader of people and an originator of concepts, you know. And I think that's what part of the romance is of why chefs have become cultural heroes and cultural icons is because we can sort of see what they do, and it's not like manipulating bond prices that you don't quite understand. You just hope there's more money at the end of the day. You see what happens
there. But at the same time, this can easily go awry.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about that when we come back in just a moment. Our guest again is Michael Rollman. His book is really The Reach of a Chef, The Journey Towards Perfection.
Well, his newest book.
Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants. Our guest today is Michael Rollman. Michael's new book is called The Reach of a Chef, A Journey Towards Perfection. Now, Michael, we've discussed when you've been on the show in the past how you go about writing your books, whether it's a book on wooden boat making or a book on
charcuterie
or a book on being a chef in the kitchen.
Surgeon.
Can you tell our audience how you go about or how you went about writing this book and what position you put yourself in to get a better perspective on it?
Well, what I always do, and really, in my mind, the only way to do it is to actually do the work as insofar as it's possible with the people that you're writing about. You're forced to learn their language, and when you learn their language and you do their work and you work side by side, they tend to open up to you and tell you their stories, and you get a real sense of the pressures that they're under, the camaraderie that evolves when you're doing especially stressful work. I walk in and try and do the work, and I keep a notepad on me and a pen in my pocket and write down everything I see and hear. And then I go home every night and type it up in sort of a journal fashion of what happened today. I ask myself questions. I write about what I think and what I saw. And later I'll go back for taped interviews with people, but only after I get to know them. Because before you get to know them, taped interviews really aren't worth anything.
Do you think it biases you at all in their favor?
Certainly.
By spending so much time with them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've worried about that a lot, especially in writing about chefs, some of whom I've collaborated with, not just written about. There is that danger, and so I'm very upfront and I hope transparent about how I work, my relationships with the chefs, and I hopefully develop a trust with the reader so that the reader at least knows who I am, how I'm going about getting this information, and can judge for themselves if I'm being somehow manipulated or trying to be manipulative.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I also think that, you know, all food writing is not criticism, and I think that if you're going to be a critic of a restaurant, you need to go in and maintain whatever anonymity you can and try and, you know, the critic is an advocate for the anonymous diner, and
right.
So therefore the critic needs to strive for whatever anonymity they can get. You know, that's not the purpose of your writing at all.
No, right. No, it's the opposite. I couldn't be a restaurant critic. My mm-hmm. allegiance is to the chef and writing about their world as accurately as possible.
And if you want people to know about Thomas Keller, well, someone who knows Thomas Keller has to write about him.
Arguably, no one knows him better than I do who's also writing about him. So I'm giving you, you know, there's a trade-off. You know, there is possibly some compromise there.
We're going to have to leave it there for just a moment. When we come back after the news, we're going to be talking more with Michael Rollman, author of Reach of a Chef, The Journey Towards Perfection. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey's Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today, our guest is Michael Rollman. Michael is one of the greatest chroniclers, in our opinion, of the role of the chef in society. He's written several books on the topic, the most recent of which is The Reach of a Chef, The Journey Toward Perfection, which you can find out about and even buy on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We recommend it very highly. And now, Michael, in this book, you talk a lot about sort of the changing role of the chef in society, and anybody who's paying attention knows that that's the case. I'd like to talk about, say, pick three different chefs and talk about the different roles that they occupy. And I think these are people that you've all worked with. If we were to talk about, say, Thomas Keller, Emeril Lagasse, and Rachel Ray,
mm-hmm.
would you say those are three very different types of chefs with three different roles to play?
I would say that Rachel and Emeril have very similar roles.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are bringing hordes of people into the kitchen and making them feel comfortable with food. Emeril's doing it more as much with guys as anybody ever has, more so than anybody ever has. And Rachel's doing it for just scads of people throughout the country. I went to one of her book signings, and you know, I couldn't see the end of the people. I just mm-hmm. couldn't see the end of them. It's just amazing the reach that these guys have. Thomas Keller, he educates in a completely different way, I think. And that's where their main differences lie.
I think, you know, if I were to look at it from, you know, just being a restaurateur and being a civilian in the business looking at things and not having looked at the issue as closely as you and not knowing these people as well as you do, the way I see it from the outside is that Thomas Keller is more focused on, though he has, you know, broad appeal and he does other things, he's focused on primarily making his restaurants great, and also the
I don't want to say kicking and screaming into this world, but more led to it as part of his whole
and expanded more slowly,
exactly, expanded
carefully.
Whereas expansion,
Emeril, while still restaurant based and still focused on making sure that he has restaurants that make great food, is also in the media, of course, you know, probably larger, more in the media than in his restaurants. And it strikes me that Rachel Ray is just, she's almost anti-restaurant to me. I mean, do you think there's any validity to that sort of analysis?
Well, she's not anti-restaurant, but she's anti, in terms of her television presence, she makes it clear to be anti-chef. She's the home cook, and that's who she aligns herself with. Thomas Keller is all about fine restaurants and quality and standards,
mm-hmm.
And that's what he's all about. And Emeril's really about and sort of empowering the people, telling them they can do it too. They can have good food. They can have peace of mind. They can have a connection again to the things that matter. He's the preacher.
I think that we're somewhere, just a testament to where how far we've come in society is that we have different kinds of celebrity chefs. I mean, it used to be just Julia Child and mm-hmm. the Galloping Gourmet, you know?
And that's a great point. There are different kinds of celebrity chefs. It's not just one kind anymore.
Well, let's talk about culinary students entering culinary school today, because you spent a lot of time in culinary school. You actually went to culinary school as part of researching your books.
Mm-hmm.
When culinary students enter culinary school today, I often feel like, you know, it's like the kid who plays football, and he's playing football because he's hoping that one day,
because he wants to be the quarterback of the Jets.
And he's going to be sorely disappointed if he winds up playing ball for a while, you know, and, you know, then having to become a coach or something in the high school team. Do you think that culinary students are sort of starstruck and some of them are entering the profession for the glamour of it without counting on the monotony of it?
Totally. They totally are, in ways that are profound even. I mean, you have white-collar professionals in record numbers are going to culinary school, not realizing that for many years they're going to have to work at, you know, minimum pay, very hard work. Young kids are going in there thinking they don't want to be a chef even. Mm-hmm. They want to They want to be on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be stars.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get my own TV show, they ask. It used to be, according to chefs, it used to be, chef, how do I get my foot in the door of this restaurant? But now it's, how do I get my own TV show?
Are you serious? That's what students want to know, how they can get into the TV media by going to culinary school?
Many do, because that's what they see.
Yeah.
What I see in people coming out of culinary school now, and there are some very, very talented, very, very dedicated people coming
Absolutely.
Out of culinary school.
There always will be.
You know, that's a given. But I'm seeing more and more, and exactly what you're talking about, of the student who thinks that they're going to walk out of culinary school and that they know all they need to know at that point. That school is the end, and now they should be at the top of the profession.
Yeah, you get that a lot from CIA grads, or chefs often say that CIA grads think that. I knew when I'd finished there and even writing my book that I'd just begun. You've just begun when you got out of there. Now you have the tools. Now you have the stuff you need to learn all the rest.
Right. I taught you how to learn. I haven't taught you the thing, you know, is the philosophy. Would you agree with that?
Say that again?
That in school they teach them how to learn. They don't teach them everything they need to know.
Any great school does exactly that.
You know, Mark and I often, you know, because we interview chefs a lot, both for ourselves and we have a lot of consulting clients, and they'll bring us in on either if they need to hire a chef or whatever, people often hire us to come and help them make that selection. And I'm amazed by two things that I've seen, one more recent and one has sort of been out there for a while. And the more recent one is, you know, a graduate from CIA graduated with a degree in pastry who wanted like $50,000 a year and wanted to be the pastry chef.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, why would you want to arrest your development like
mm-hmm.
that, first
right.
of all?
Right. Now you're going to be at the top of a department coming right out of school, and there's going to be no one to teach you anything.
Right. I don't know why they do that. I mean, the CIA does its best to tell people what they're worth and where they stand in this industry when they leave. It's not the CIA's fault or Johnson & Wales' fault if that happens. It's really the kids' fault, and also the expectations they have when they were going in, the money they spend, a colossal amount of money.
They do. One part that we all agree on is the amount of money spent on cooking school is astronomical. When you consider the position that they're ready for when they come out of school.
Yeah,
that's true.
Well, you know, what's interesting, in that pressure to sort of make as much money as you can right away, combined with the phenomenal growth in restaurants through the 90s, has led Mark and I to a phenomenon, and tell me if you see this as well, Michael. When we go out to restaurants, especially like the Trattoria whatever in, you know, Wereverville, you know, or mm-hmm. the Bistro whomever, you know,
right.
which I'm not denigrating, although I'm just naturally a condescending fellow.
I was going to say, sure you are. I've seen you do it before. You're doing it
No,
again.
But I mean, some of these local places are really wonderful, and it's mm-hmm. a young chef and his wife, and they open up a place, or a young chef and her husband, they open up a place, and I love going to these places. But very often, these little places will have a chef, and we'll say, guy graduated from CIA in the mid-80s.
Right.
Or the guy graduated from CIA in the early 90s. Because you see that they came out with a certain style, and, you know, grilled portobello mm-hmm. mushrooms, goat cheese, and sun-dried tomatoes is what they do.
There's a restaurant in Central Jersey that Francis and I, that opened almost exactly the same time as Stage Left did in 92, and got a lot of the same kind of critical acclaim that we did. But I will tell you that restaurant is exactly the same today as it was 14 years ago.
And I think that's a phenomenon of people coming out of school, feeling a pressure to take a sous chef or a chef position right away, and they can cook what they know, what they've learned from their instructors, but it's hard for them to advance beyond that if they don't work for a multitude of people. Do you find that's the case?
Oh, absolutely. If you really want to be a great cook and chef, you've got to spend a year in several different kitchens. Otherwise, you won't learn. You don't learn by reading cookbooks and cooking on your own. I mean, you can learn to a certain extent.
Right, you can augment your knowledge that way, but you can't. That's not the way you learn.
Yes, and you can do it only if you're free to pick and choose and experiment, which more and more you can't. If you're successful, your owners, if you're not the owner yourself, or say, look, we want consistency, not experimentation here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, when we come back, I want to talk more, and I think that the whole concept of the reach of a chef, I think that chefs, celebrity chefs and otherwise, are having an impact on society, an impact on the way that we eat, even outside of restaurants. And we're going to talk more with that after the break with Michael Roman. His book is called The Reach of a Chef, The Journey Towards Perfection. You can find out more about it or even pick it up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
So, Michael, we were talking with Anthony Bourdain a few weeks back on the show, and he was almost wistful as he talked about cooking in a kitchen and how much he missed it and how...
Oh, yeah, right.
but then he got a check.
Exactly.
And I thought, you know, can't you go back and cook in the kitchen anytime you want? I mean, you're the executive chef of a restaurant. You have all these other things going on, I understand, but... What prevents the superstar chef from going back to the restaurant and getting in there? I mean, Rocco DiSpiritu is a prime example of that. Why isn't Rocco back in a kitchen somewhere cooking?
Well, Bourdain isn't back in the kitchen because he's lost his muscles and his will to cook professionally, I think. He just doesn't have it anymore. And he'd be the first to admit it. He's old. You can't. This is hard work.
Yeah.
And he did it for a long time. Back-breaking work.
Mm-hmm.
He likes the idea of it, I'm sure, but he would never go back there. He's having too much fun, making too much money, and just enjoying life, and he should. He worked hard for a long time.
Yeah.
Why Rocco doesn't do it? Gosh, I really wish I know. I think it's a real tragedy. I think it's a real loss. I think here's a guy who is genuine, you know, one of the best cooks in the country.
Yes.
Who gave up his real talent for celebrity. He gave it up for fame.
How did
and that's
that go,
all there is to it.
How did that go wrong? Well, because I'll tell you, we agree with you. Rocco has cooked for us. He once did a 21-course tasting menu for us with, like, 9 different wines.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 5-7-hour extravaganza. It was one of the best meals of my life, and I had 10 other meals that were up there with that guy. What went wrong? How did the show take away his ability to be one of the best chefs in the country?
It wasn't the show that took it away. I asked Gourmet if I could write about Rocco because I'd had just such a meal as you described, and thought, God, you know, I've eaten all over New York and all the 4 stars, and this beats them all, and this is as close as anything that I've ever come to being of a French Laundry caliber.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so they did. They said, okay, go ahead and write about this guy. And what I realized then when I was writing about him was he was really concerned with image and fame. He wanted to be well known. He wanted to be better recognized for his talent, and he wanted it now. Mm. He saw all this fame, all this celebrity that people were getting. In my opinion, he wanted that more than he wanted to cook.
Man.
But he's still got all the talent. I just don't understand why he's not back in a kitchen.
Why doesn't he go back now?
Back in a kitchen somewhere cooking and showing off what made him famous in the first place.
He's lost his way. It's his only way back, I think, to happiness and to some sort of respectability among his colleagues is to return to the kitchen and do what he does so well.
Yeah, and I tell you, I want to go on record one more time. We've said this a million times. I think Rocco DiSpiritu is one of the most talented cooks and chefs in America. Period, end of story. And I hope one day we get to have his food again. It's
me
a great
too.
Loss that we don't.
Me too.
So let's talk again. As things change, I think one of the great things about the restaurant business, and we're in a city that was very wisely led through from the urban malaise of the 70s that so many mid-sized northeast cities felt to being a thriving urban center. And the city fathers who planned this focused on the arts, and then from the arts they hoped to move things to private sector. And the logical way to do that is then they had we became a restaurant town, and restaurants have thrived here. And then other businesses sort of came up around restaurants. Now we have a lot of housing down here because people want to live here because there are theaters and restaurants and places to go. But one of the things, and I talk often in front of other state legislatures I have and in front of the New Jersey state legislature about how restaurants are one of the few paths to success that still don't require a college education, and where they don't even necessarily require a tremendous command of the English language, where someone can come in and by dint of hard work rise to an executive position. Do you think that's the case, and do you think that's under threat with the increasing professionalization of the restaurant business?
It is making it harder for those, those folks who have no higher education, and immigrants entering the culture. It does make it harder because there are, now there's 55,000 graduates coming out of culinary schools who want those positions too. The thing is, they're usually so low paying that ultimately the chef owner will get the chef that will work for the least amount of money. So ultimately, and because you don't need those higher skills for this kind of work, no, I don't think we're in danger of that. I do think that we will, those people are less likely to rise and be influential in the industry, whereas somebody who's got an anthropology degree from Stanford and a degree from the CIA is not going to be content to be a line cook for very long and is going to want to do things and raise the standard of his or her own life and wherever she or he works.
Yeah, it's funny. I see that, but I also see on the other end of things, like you said, very often these culinary students come out of culinary school and they have salary requirements that are higher than I'm willing to pay for somebody who doesn't yet know what they're doing. And I'll wind up hiring some guy who's hardworking, and once that person's in and trusted and is loyal to me because I gave them a job and I'm loyal to that person because they're performing, I think it's very interesting to see, at least on the sous chef level, the executive sous chef level, and increasingly in New York on the chef de cuisine level, you're seeing these two very different people occupy those positions. Mm-hmm. People who've come from CIA and traveled all around France, and the guy who's just worked his butt off for 10 years to get there.
Are you seeing the difference in different restaurants where one has kind of got this loyal following of people and the other has maybe more
transient culinary
students? More transient but higher educated people?
No, I think what I'm seeing, and you guys see it probably more than I do, but what I'm seeing is that guy who's that hardworking guy, he's going to make it, and the other one's going to select themselves out because their demands are too much, and you can't be overly demanding in this work. Those guys who are loyal to you are going to rise up.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's what we see.
Hey, listen, we've got to leave it there. Michael, thank you so much for joining us on the Restaurant Guys today.
Always a pleasure.
That's super. Thank you, Michael. That was Michael Rollman. His book is The Reach of a Chef, A Journey Towards Perfection. We recommend it highly. It was a great read. You can find it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back at the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And I just want to point out that we had our own commercial on our own show today. We have coming up this weekend on Friday night, we're going to show Big Night with Stanley Tucci in the restaurant and then cook the meal from the movie in the restaurant. It's going to be a lot of fun. So
it really is very much fun.
You can go to CatherineLombardi.com or give us a call at 296-9463. It'll be cool.
It's an event we do every couple of years that is one of the most fun things we do. Anyway, so Francis, I'm going to posit a question to you.
Posit away.
Do you think that the Food Network and everybody watching all these chefs on TV and listening to us and getting involved in the food world is making a difference in the way people eat and the way people cook? Or do you think it's a lot like when I watch those exercise shows on TV? I'm like, I'm going to need some popcorn. I got another half hour.
The popcorn is too good for you. It's probably Doritos. I think it's a mix. I think that coffee table cookbooks often stay on the coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that a lot of these books, especially the books where people are a little more thoughtful, I think that people are it's changing the way people eat, especially which is why I get so angry at not angry, but I get, I'm unhappy with the fancy food show, and I'm unhappy with the stuff that pretends to be great food, but is really just great packaging and marketing.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it at the beginning of the show. I don't love the whole, I'm going to market this thing to be something better, and it's
Country
not.
Country Time lemonade, just like Grandma used to make.
Not
Grandma
really
made
better.
Powdered lemonade.
But
I don't
or even a famous chef putting their face on something
that has corn syrup in it.
That's not to to the level it, you expect it to be. I don't mind a famous chef putting their face on something that's extraordinary.
Great.
But you know, I think the chef cheapens himself, and the product is overhyped.
But I think overall that people we're having the discussion now, and we're raising awareness, and people are a little start looking at the ingredients in their Pop-Tarts and realizing that that's what's in the food, and saying, do I want to be eating high monoamine erythritates?
I'll tell you, at the place I see it is the supermarkets, the mainstream basic supermarkets. You see the organic sections growing, you see the healthier foods sections growing,
the more
available products of real quality in the mainstream supermarkets.
The overriding mantra of the show is good food is good. That's good for you. Eat well, eat healthy. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.